everybody. How's it going? Welcome to our first episode here. We're just getting our music nice and low. Welcome to the first episode of Left Reckoning. My name's David Griscom. I'm here with Matt Leck. How are you doing,
bro? Hello, everybody.
Thanks everyone so much. I'm really excited to launch right now in 2021. With this brand new show and project. Thanks everyone for supporting us so far. And it really has meant a lot to us, but we got a lot of work to do. This week has been pretty, I don't know. We experienced a dumb coup yesterday, and I think we might need to dive into that. But later in the show, we're going to be joined by the great Malaika Jabali. We're also going to talk about Assange. Will not be extradited to the United States. Nebraska's governor's death cult. And a couple other fun stories. But I think we might need to just dive right into what happened yesterday because it really threw a wrench in everybody's plans. So yesterday, as everybody knows, there was a dumb coup. It was incompetent, but it was certainly dangerous. And it was quite a worrying moment for our democracy. There's a lot to get into.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I'm totally up for, the more academic debates. I think Daniel Bessner is an interesting perspective on this. But I also think, I think people overemphasize the dumbness of the idiots that got through and how delusional they were about their abilities to do anything. Because Eric Levitz pointed out that if they had done this earlier when Trump actually meant something to any of the, like McConnell, to name one, it might have, we might be in a different territory. I don't know specifically how much. That said, what's going on in the Republican Party to foment this and basically cultivate it over years is what's, I think, the real concerning thing.
Yeah, and I think, so everybody knows what happened yesterday, that essentially there was this rally that Donald Trump spoke at. A lot of, Republican members of the party spoke at as well, including a new congressperson who positively cited Hitler.
just to put the meat on those bones, she said, and Hitler was right on one thing. Whoever has the youth has the future. And it's like, you don't need to cite Hitler on. That's not a very Hitlerian.
That's an easy point to make.
Yes. That's any sort of leader of a, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that happens. And then you basically have the Capitol Police, which refused. I mean, we're getting more and more information about what actually happened on the ground, but refused help from the Pentagon earlier in this week. Essentially let these people in. And we have video, there's plenty of video at this point now that is just showing them literally letting them in, including some videos of police officers not only letting them in, but waving the protesters in. And it had serious consequences. I mean,
Four dead. I mean, the facts are we know now, at least there's probably more going to be coming out, but the Capitol Police said no to backup. And fundamentally, this shouldn't have been a surprise. They're saying they had no evidence that there was going to be some sort of breach attempt of the Congress. But we'll just look right here for a moment. Oh, where's my I just got to refresh my share screen. Right here, we have this guy, Ari Kovler, on December 19th. Pro-Trump forces are very excited about Donald Trump's call for a mass D.C. protest on the day Congress counts the Electoral College votes. Many see it as the mobilization call they've been waiting for. Further down, some are preparing to shoot any protesters. They see it as a marching order, and some are preparing to storm the Capitol to stop the certification. It is exactly what happened. They didn't stop it for good, right? But they stopped it until the wee hours of the morning. And I mean, that's the scary thing is, like, those guys were marching out of there, and sure, the National Guard could have mowed him down at any moment. And but they didn't, right? The Capitol Police stood down. And those guys walked out of there thinking, you know what? Next time we're coming back. Yeah. And it's literally saying it's not going to be peaceful.
Mm-hmm. I just jumping on that, I lived in D.C. for a while and I was at J20. In fact, I got the shit beat out of me with all of those other protesters. We were blocks away from any of the action. You know what I'm saying? Where people, important members of the political establishment were. I mean, we were far away from that for the most part. And the police reacted with such brutality. But also, with a deep understanding of what the plans of the J20 protesters were, because they had been preparing for weeks and weeks and had been infiltrating groups, to make sure that they could come in on the day and, systematically arrest people, and beat them in the street. Right. So for me to see what happened yesterday, again, like, I think some people have gone, I think it's important to make this distinction. No one here is wanting, the police to mow down people or anything like that. The point that we're making is that the police make a political decision when it comes to these kind of right-wing protesters, right, to let them in and to not be, aggressive. I mean, these people took over the United States Congress, right? And there were, there were deaths and those were unfortunate, but only once the situation had just got completely out of control. And the fact that they were basically beating up people in the street 4 years ago for breaking a window outside of a Starbucks. It just really shows you what side these kind of security forces find themselves on.
Yeah, and I agree, like Perrine pointed out, that the ultimate thing we need to fight, and which a lot of people are emphasizing, I think rightly, is the coming bipartisan consensus that's going to be supportive of just massive cop powers, right, and more, further crackdown. So, like, maybe those guys will get shot next time, but guess what? It's going to be way worse for the left-wing protesters, right? And we definitely want to resist that part. But at the same time, like, that it is a tightrope on certain things. Cause I do think like this, I mean, this is the guy who came in. We have him here, Kevin Greeson, 55-year-old from Athens, Alabama, who died of a medical emergency, reportedly tasing himself in the testicles. I don't know if that's true. During the unrest in Washington yesterday, posted on Parler last month with the caption, "I wish these motherfuckers would come, to my hood." All I'll say is I get a little bit frustrated when these people are suggested as like our rural allies. Like, these are asshole reactionaries, and they're that wherever, however close to the coast you are. Go on.
I think we should talk about that for a second. There's still some more stuff I'd like to get to with the police, but this is something that really boggles my mind. I actually would imagine that you probably have the same experience as me. It really is like the people who make this argument, the kind of left wing folks, right, who make this argument, like, these guys are actually our allies and we need to convince them, whatever. I'm very much about the idea that we need to push for political realignment in this country, which means bringing in some people who are conservative voters, right? That's not what I'm talking about right now. I'm talking about the people who showed up yesterday. These people are not this kind of working class mass that some people on Twitter try to make them out to be. And it's really funny to me because it's like a lot of people, especially on the coasts, have a really hard time recognizing rich Southerners. Like, unless it's like Boss Hogg, right? They don't understand what these guys actually are like. And I'm telling you, I've worked for these guys my whole life, right? These guys have been my boss in multiple situations. You can recognize that these people aren't coming from poverty or hardship. These are fairly well-off folks who are able to fly across the country to Washington, D.C. Now, of course, there's going to be some people who show up and they get wrapped up in this kind of mindset, right? But the vast majority of these people are not some kind of dissatisfied working class mass, but instead super wealthy, or at least, petty bourgeois members of society who are angry about, being kicked out of power. Yeah, this is exactly right.
The guy, this is from Won't Survive for More. The guy who entered Pelosi's office and stole mail got a PPP loan. Independent contractors, glass and glazing contractors. I'm sure he treats his employees great. Mm-hmm. And also the woman who got shot trying to enter the chamber, as far as I can tell. Was a small business owner as well, a pool cleaning supply. So, like, yeah, I just think, like, people know, like, you run into these assholes when you, like, accidentally have to fucking work for them and they turn out to be nightmares. Like, that's where these aren't working alongside you, these people.
Yeah. No, these aren't, these are, like, small business owners for the most part. Or actually, a lot of them are just rich people, straight up. And I got to say about that guy who got the PPP loan, it was very funny to me to see everything that was happening yesterday, though, to see some liberals, like, that was the image that they were hand-wringing about. Like, how dare he put his feet on Nancy Pelosi's desk? And out of everything that happened yesterday, it's like, I'm sorry, that might be the least offensive thing.
Yeah, I mean, this is where form and content, you got to, like, there's a form of protest, which if somebody got into Nancy Pelosi's office, for instance, for Medicare for All and did that, it'd be cool. And I mean, they'd have to pay the civil disobedience penalties. They'd probably be arrested, right? And like, that's going to happen. And particularly, speaking of civil disobedience, if you try to break into a barricaded chamber of parliament anywhere in the world, you might expect a bullet, I'll just say. And like, I do think in, as a way to not let this become an opportunity to push a new Orwellian surveillance state, you do kind of need to move off of those, the people who were propagandized into doing that. And into like, for instance, I mean, Pelosi's calling for the resignation of the Capitol Police chief. Obviously that should happen. There should be a full investigation of exactly everything that happened yesterday. Cause it like, that is, that's the worrying thing. Right.
No doubt about it. And like, I think before we move on past like the actual makeup of these people too, who are protesting, it's important to understand that these were folks who it was pure spectacle, right? I mean, that's why they're all dressed up in costumes. That's why like one of the main activities that you were seeing yesterday was guys taking selfies with themselves to show to the boys back home, right? I mean, this was 100% a kind of like poning moment. This was, you know, political theater through and through. And you have to understand that this is a very frightening far right movement, but you also have to understand too how deep the kind of online culture is to it, as well as like the need to sort of be able to dress up in a costume and wave a flag around. It's a weird kind of proto. I like what Richard Seymour wrote an interesting piece about, calling like inchoate fascism, right? It's sort of like, it's not fascism, but what it is the kind of forces that are the kind of forces in political worldview, which are all over the place. Like you have like anti-vaxxers and, you know, anti-abortion people, along with just like actual Nazis, right? All marching together. And there's all of these different ideas floating around. And that's exactly a kind of proto form of fascism, which is like people who want, one, the spectacle, and two, are just absolutely against the idea of democracy. Oh, you're muted, Matt. Sorry.
So let's bring just Matt Iglesias in here to down the anti-defund stuff that's coming out of here, because he said, let me just bring this up.
We'll
have another funny Matt Iglesias tweet to cleanse the palate of this one. But he says, clearly the answer to yesterday's failure is to defund the Capitol Police and instead hire a squad of social service providers to tackle the real root causes of the violence. Now, this is still like, I mean, he's not Vox anymore, I guess, but Vox not understanding the basic premises of defund the police, which is like, there's the basics, just in terms of terms, is police and security are two separate things. I mean, the Capitol Hill police should do that, but I don't think there's anybody who on the abolition side that looks at like the amount of guns, for instance, that people have in this country and thinks like security in general as a concept is going to go out the window. Police is a very specific model of or type of behavior that the state does to people. But do you have anything you want to say there?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we should get into, because like, what are the big political lessons from this? And I think the first thing that we need to tackle is going to be the question about policing. Let's get one thing straight. The Capitol Police are very well funded and very well trained. This is an organization that has around 2,300 officers whose sole duty is to protect an area of less than 16 acres, right? And essentially to protect one building. What they did yesterday was a deliberate choice. It was not a choice that came out of austerity or a lack of budget. It was a political choice to allow this kind of rally to continue. And I'm not, you know, well, I mean, we're all pissed about this, but like personally, as somebody who has seen people get the shit beat out of them by these assholes, it is incredibly frustrating to realize the kind of difference in decision making that they made for left wing protesters versus whatever the hell, you know, we saw yesterday.
yeah, so friend of the show, Joshua Russell, commented on that as well. And like, I would say, look, the restraint was actually commendable, I think. I mean, not letting them into the building to terrorize lawmakers. Mm-hmm. I think that it should be investigated severely. But in terms of like not mowing them down, once they're inside, like right, great. And like I think that like right, like we need to think about how we would act if, for instance, this was like a Black Lives Matter protest. You wouldn't want them, like, look, if you're going into a senator's office, you are taking your life into your own hands. People need to know that the Secret Service doesn't fuck around. Mm-hmm. But like, like, I think there was a lot of like, I don't want to name anybody specific names because, you know, emotions were high, but like calling for people to start disappearing like these guys. And it's
yeah,
like,
don't do that.
Yeah.
You don't need to encourage the United States police force in any city in this country to start practicing clandestine tactics. I'll promise you that. Well, I think in this last bit, before we get to something sort of funny here.
Oh, sorry. Let's just put a button on that Iglesias thing quick.
Oh, damn. Yeah, let me bring it.
So here's a quick thing that a former coworker of his, Sarah Colgood, who used to work with him, it looks like at, well, I'll just put up the tweet here. This is very funny and I guess revealing of Maddie. Matt Iglesias says, for various reasons, it's probably better for the $2,000 to arrive in April when more stuff will be open, blah, blah, blah. You know, his typical bullshit. Sarah said, once justified his refusal to wash his own dishes in the shared work kitchen by explaining that his salary versus the office assistant's hourly payment, that it was more economical for our company to have her wash his dishes than for him to do it.
Jesus Christ. What a sudden, like, not, this is why you don't empower logic nerds. It's a very dangerous thing to have those people in your offices.
Or like Matt Iglesias' dad is like a Harvard
professor
or something, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he's
like Josh Barrow as well. Like the wonks, all the, it turns out wonk just means child of an Ivy League, like Ivy League, like corporatist.
I think that's about right. Yeah, no. Yeah. Matty sucks, man. Absolutely. And you know, we're going to have to push back against all these people who are going to try to tie what happened yesterday into an anti-defund the police argument. Because again, the funding of the Capitol Police Department was not the problem yesterday. The complicity of the Capitol Police Department with the right-wing protesters, that's the problem.
Yeah. On that note, Peter Gowan, who I think wrote a piece in Jacobin, had this tweet quoting this Joe Scarborough segment. But he says, I'll put it up here, very significant that this frame, in parentheses, the correct one, is being validated by MSNBC, going to make the restorationist pro-cop narrative much harder to push. I mean, I hope so. And here's Scarborough.
If these insurrectionists were black, they would have been shot in the face. And my God, if these insurrectionists were Muslim, they would have been sniped from the top of buildings. So I want to know from the Capitol Hill police, what is it? Is it just white people? Or is it Donald Trump supporters? Why do you scream at people for walking across the street three blocks away from the Capitol? Why are you known as badasses around the Capitol? But then Trump supporters come in and you open the fucking doors for them.
Jesus.
You open the doors for them and let them breach the people's house. What is wrong with you?
I mean, the only, you know, quibble you have is, you know, you're not sure if Joe supports the whole shoot him in the face or snipe him from the rooftops thing.
Yeah.
But like the whole, the key frame, I think, hopefully to like, to maybe deflate the refund of the police that's going to come out of this, is to say like, this isn't obviously not a funding problem. This is, they opened the doors for them. And hopefully that's the biggest escalation of this sort of behavior that we see, because I don't want to see that anything more happen, to be honest.
Well, I think so. And I think, so there's going to be that one material fight over police funding that is, you know, I think, That is a good sign that even, you know, guys like Joe are taking that position. But I think there's another important question to ask before I would bring Malaika on too. It's like, you know, what's changed politically? And I'll just say this. What happened yesterday was egged on by Donald Trump, somebody who has made it quite adamant that he does want there to be a coup. It's very scary sometimes what you saw yesterday, but it's also very funny that this kind of bloated billionaire asshole, just for the first time in his life, can't get what he wants, and all the people who he thinks owes him favors are refusing to. But then what becomes worrying about that is the realization that this is a gift to people like Mitch McConnell and a lot of members of the Republican Party, because it gives them an out. It gives them an out because they get to say, oh, you remember that that day, January 6, 2020, I mean, 2021, when the whole world felt like it was on fire and American democracy was in crisis. We stand against that and we break with Donald Trump. right? They break with him at the weakest point in his candidate, in his presidency, at the very end of his presidency, after people like Mitch McConnell have gotten everything that they want from him. And that's what this is for the members of the, a lot of members of the GOP, is it an out? It's a way for them to become respectable again, right? Now, of course, not everybody. Morons like Ted Cruz are doubling down on this stuff. And there's no doubt about it that there is a deep-rooted Trump faction in the Republican Party, particularly that was elected in the most recent election. These people aren't going away. But for the people who have been so complicit in what Donald Trump has done over these past 4 years, they now are able to distinguish themselves. And we can't let them. Don't let any of this nonsense rehabilitation that we're going to start seeing over the next 2 weeks, don't let them get away with that.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, Josh Hawley lost a book deal. Let's see if there's any further consequences for these people.
No. Speaking of that, unless you had something else, we have some good footage of Donald Trump's promise. Our comedian friend, it's on the sound sheet, Matt. What's it called? Shrimp AJ. Here, Donald Trump's promise to all of his supporters, read aloud by our honestly the best Donald Trump impersonation that I've heard in a long time, and this is probably one of my favorite of all of his videos.
Angry right now. I know you're angry, but go home. Come home and get in our big bed. You can come in. And lay with me in the big, nice bed if you go home right now. Everything was stolen. You have every right to be violent, but don't be violent. I know that you're angry right now. And don't do karate chops. And don't do pin kick. And don't do punches or any of it. But do guns and do knives. But go home and come home with me. Listen, you are a special boy. And you're beautiful, and Daddy loves you very much. And Daddy loves you an extremely great deal. And if you go home right now, I promise you, you can have a Lego set. If you go home right now, we're going to, you know what, on the way home, for us to get in a big bed together, and we are going to watch SpongeBob movie. On the way home, we're going to stop by Target, and you can pick out a Lego set up to $30 this time. And everybody knows that $30 got you a pretty kick-ass Lego set in the 90s, okay? And I know it's a smaller Lego set these days, but it's at least our spaceship, a vehicle, two minifigures, okay? $29.99 and not a penny more, but you...
Oh, it's so good. I mean, I love it. I love those... I mean, his videos, his Trump is so perfect, but... What he's so good at doing is, you know how he doesn't do the S's? Like, he doesn't do the plural for some words, which is so Trump. He's like, roundhouse kick instead of roundhouse kicks. He really I hope that those don't go away post Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he keeps posting. I think both Shrimp JJ, at Shrimp JJ, I think that's his at, right? And Donald Trump. As we let Malaika join us here, I just wanted to share on the screen as she gets her mic set up. Evo weighed in here.
Oh, yes.
And if you just want to read this out for people, you have the translation.
Yeah. So Evo Morales, just again showing what the definition of solidarity is, tweeting out, "The Trump administration implements a self-coup to stay in power. Just as it did in Bolivia, it promotes racist and fascist violence and is not interested in democracy. Our solidarity with the American people." Anyway. And man, I mean, like, honestly, it's so perfect. It's exactly why they were so afraid of Evo, despite everything that this country has done to him and the Bolivian people, that he's out there showing solidarity with folks. I think
it's I can't wait to see Evo on MSNBC. They're talking about
one day Evo Morales.
And the Bolivian people, that he's out there showing solidarity with folks. I think
I can't wait to see.
Hey, Malaika, I think we're getting a little feedback.
Yeah, a little bit.
The Bolivian people, that he's out there showing solidarity with.
Hey, Malaika, I think we're getting a little feedback. I might just wait a second, Matt.
I think that might be good now. You there, Malaika? Okay, I think she hears. I think she heard us on the stream, but not on.
You there, Mike?
Let me message her.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
No worries. We can just take a second.
Yeah. Let's see if. I guess in the meantime. Well, yeah. What should we do in the meantime? Do you want me to message her? Or do you want to message her while I play a little clip here?
Why don't you play a clip and I can message her?
Okay. Cool. So. Speaking of comedy guests, basically, David, what I think was happening was, she wasn't hearing us on the Zoom call. She was just hearing us on the YouTube.
On the YouTube.
Call.
Okay.
Yeah. We have, mute David here. And we have a little video by a guy named Nick Lutzko. Now, Nick works with Tim and, here's his bio, Tim and Eric's mandatory tour music. I know he does stuff with Vic Berger as well. Oh, here she is again. Let's see if this will work. All right. Maliki, you there?
I'm here.
All right.
I had you all on the YouTube going.
Oh, yeah.
I sound like an old person on the YouTube. YouTube playing while I was also trying to join. So it was like creating this echo thing.
No, it's all good. Well, welcome, Malika. It's so great to have you. This is for everyone listening and watching. This is Malika Jabali, filmmaker, writer, lawyer, and activist. You can check out her work in Guardian, Gen Magazine, Current Affairs, where else? The Intercept, all over the place. She's an incredible, insightful writer, one of my favorite minds out there. And we're really happy to have you here today on our first episode of Left Reckoning.
Thank you. Congrats, guys. How's it feel?
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really separate the different types of excitement that are happening right now.
There's going on in the world. This is probably like, any other day. Lately.
Exactly.
I know. Well, actually, on that note, I know we have some things we wanted to get to, but I was curious if you have any thoughts on what happened yesterday.
Well, first of all, it was my birthday yesterday, so I was pissed because I wasn't looking at the news at all. Like, I was intentionally trying to kind of tune out and enjoy the day. And so I had friends texting me and they're like, "Happy birthday. I'm sorry you got to deal with this." And I'm like, "Deal with what? Like, if y'all didn't help me, I wouldn't know." So anyway, besides that, I think that this is just a reflection of what America is. I think people use the terms insurrection and we're hearing about how much this is un-American. And I think this is fundamentally very American. I think it shows precisely the types of politics and ideology that created the country. We've had this sort of reaction to this. I wouldn't even say this is abnormal extremism. I think it's fundamental to how America came to be, on stolen land, on the backs of stolen labor, on the backs of wage slaves and then industrial North. So all of this in terms of, police officers siding with the right wing extremists and people who want to tear down Congress comes from, it comes from their ancestors. Mm-hmm. So none of this is surprising to me. I think it's jarring. I think we haven't seen, this kind of massive fight, I think, on the right in D.C., like on federal grounds before in our lifetime. So it's jarring for us. But if you know history, this isn't surprising per se.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And one thing that was so frustrating, and I'm glad that you weren't doing what everyone else was doing, just doom scrolling on Twitter yesterday. But it was really frustrating to see also, on CNN or, all the mainstream media, people saying things like, "Oh, this is just like we're in Bogota or in Kabul." This is like what happened in a foreign country. It's like, no, I'm sorry. There is a dude right now looking like an extra from a Red Dead Redemption, from the video game there in the bison suit, standing up and charging into the, into the Capitol building. I mean, this is 100% America. This ain't Putin or anything like that. This is what this country is, and you have to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, and the people who are fighting in this believe that they're being very patriotic. I joined Parler a couple of months ago to see what kind of rhetoric is being shared on there. And there are at least 6,000 posts about a civil war and what they're going to do to bring about a civil war. And then if you look at the people who are fighting for this, it's half the country. Mm-hmm. You have people in the legislature who are supporting this. So this is not, you know, something that we should be surprised with. We've had warning signs forever.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like the 1898 Wilmington race coup, basically, that's been getting more. There's a big book on it in 2020. That wasn't the first one I've even seen on that. I feel like we should be at a point where we know this now and we can't really play dumb. But I mean, the purpose of part of the corporate media is to continually be incredulous about all this stuff. So I guess I shouldn't really be surprised.
Yeah, and I would also just add, as you know, before you got on, Matt and I were talking about, it's amazing how much cover you get from the media for these protesters, basically trying to make it seem like they're this disenfranchised working class. You know, when we were talking about, you know, the guy whose you know, photograph is now famous of him putting up his feet on Nancy Pelosi's desks, he got a PPP loan for like over $100,000, right? He's like a small business owner.
Yeah. I mean, it attracts a lot of those types. There was another woman, people were sharing her, like she went on some angry rant, and an angry white person doesn't automatically make them poor or mm-hmm. working class or struggling. These are just angry people who want to yell into, I mean, I would say they have it's a void, but it's not. They clearly have, you know, a whole state apparatus that's willing to support them. But she went viral as well. And people were like, you don't see her frustration. And then I looked her up and I think she owns a gun business. Like these are all small, you know, a lot of these are just regular ass small business owners who are doing better than they were 4 years ago. And they want to maintain power.
Yeah. They flew across the country on those PPP loans.
Yeah, on the government's dime. And then we're let into the Capitol on the government's dime again by the Capitol Police, right? And they're like, yeah, welfare queens. Well, I want to get to some of this other stuff because what happened yesterday really threw such a wrench in our plans. I really want to get your take, you know, just really quickly on the, you know, on the Georgia Senate race, because it's going to be interesting, especially for what you know, this next year has in store for us, not only because of the balance of power in the Senate, but what kind of lessons people are going to try to draw from it. It's really interesting. Like Matt and I were doing segments on, you know, on Ossoff saying like, how the hell can we vote for this guy? Because he's so right wing, like he's against all the kind of policies that the left wants to see. But meanwhile, he's being attacked. Both him and Warnock were being attacked by the GOP as like these crazy communist radicals who are going to come, you know, and fundamentally change the United States. But despite all of this, they still won. And I'm just curious as to what, you know, you think the kind of lessons are for Georgia or for national politics after seeing this.
Well, I think the first lesson is that leave left activists alone, because it really doesn't matter what they say on the ground. Mm-hmm. What happens to moderates electorally is up to them and their campaigns. And so the big argument, even though Joe Biden won, despite all this fear mongering around defunding the police and socialism, despite him winning, the next tactic used by a lot of centrist Democrats, people like Claire McCaskill, Spanberger and Jim Clyburn and Barack Obama, was that, well, just the mere existence of a left flank that says the word defunding means poof, all of a sudden moderates lose elections. And we're talking about Georgia in the deep South, mm-hmm. a red state, a swing state, mostly conservative state that despite all of that rhetoric, you had these two Democratic candidates who still won. So whatever happens on the ground is up to what those moderate campaigns do. So it's clearly an example of the DNC and Democratic Party establishment trying to find a scapegoat for their failures, as mm-hmm. they often do. I was in Georgia around the time of the days leading up to the runoffs. I was there for a little over a week, maybe almost 2 weeks. And I'm from Georgia. And so I was hearing these attack ads like every day, nonstop. I was like, what? And I mean, and it was actually kind of inspiring for me because I was like, oh, Warnock was actually supporting, you know, Palestine. So they kept replaying this ad of him saying, Palestinians lives matter, Palestinian lives matter. I was like, oh, for real? I didn't even know that. Good for him. And they use AOC in like so many ads. So again, it's about moderates trying to find a scapegoat for their failures. And we need to be even more adamant on, you know, if you consider yourself a radical, a leftist, or whatever, it's up to us to create our own agenda, our own platform to support elected activists that are going to support things that are necessary to systematically change the system, because we know that it's morally just. And no matter how necessary it is within a pandemic, the Democratic Party is not going to support it. So we have to find alternatives outside of the party without getting into these rhetorical battles that are futile, so that we can find people who actually support these causes.
Yeah, Michael, do you see a way forward on that? You know, without getting too deep into the arguments of the last week, I do think, to say something I think most people can agree with, that the support of Pelosi, particularly in the squad, should be contingent on something that's more than just her not being Hakeem Jeffries, for instance. Mm-hmm. And what they've gotten is really like Cori Bush on the Reform Committee, and they got rid of the PAYG. They got an exemption, not rid of PAYGO, but they got PAYGO exemptions for like Medicare for All and the Green New Deal, which, like, that's good. PAYGO is horrible, but it's almost horrifying that that even needed to be done in the first place. I mean, we've also talked about this in the context of the UK Labour Party and like the desire for a more independent, you know, wing. And I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on that.
Frankly, I think because of the size of the country, because of the entrenchment of its right-wing ideology, I don't see anything being reformed within the two-party system on a national level in any of our lifetimes. And so I don't focus my work on that. I try to focus even my reporting on local organizing. I think it's going to be more important for people to find organizations where they are, in their cities, in their counties, in their board of elections, in their states, to change city budgets there, to change what's happening in state legislatures there, because you can impact a lot. I think because of how our two-party system works, where it works like a mafia from every level of government, even the organizing work that I do in Brooklyn, in East New York, you have such a like rabid opposition to any sort of like challenge to Democratic incumbents. So you have to kiss the ring of the Democratic local party. You have to make sure you join what's called a Democratic Party Club. And just getting on a petition is challenging as I don't know what, because they can sue you to smithereens if you just try and get on the petition to be able to run in a primary. Mm-hmm. So if you do not build a local apparatus, you're not going to have the infrastructure to be able to change people's minds. We have been so convinced that capitalism is the solution, that the policies that we have about, you know, these basic reforms, that charter schools, that fracking, that all these things that centrists support are good and valuable, and this is all that we need. So you have to have like some really serious consciousness raising. And that cannot happen if we are not looking at our own communities, if we're not talking to people who are our neighbors, or if we're not talking to people who are just in our towns, in our cities. And so I think that's really the first step, is raising people's consciousness to recognize that the structure is a problem. And it's not going to change because they're backed by capitalist elites on both sides.
I think that's exactly right. And that's sort of one thing that I've been talking about a lot on this show has been what I'm sort of calling like voters in this country, or the average working class person in this country. They really do believe, and I think, in a lot of the more radical left wing proposals that we like, things like Medicare for All, higher minimum wage, like working class people really understand the need for those things. But one thing that I think some activists don't understand, and especially people, especially pundits, don't understand, is that despite people actually personally believing these things, there's a kind of like general like depression about the possibility of political action. And that's the kind of real local organizing that we have to be doing on the left, is not only to have a place for people to come, but also for them to see, one, okay, there's people who agree with me, but also that these things are possible, and that they're possible through us coming together. And I think that's something that's going to be really difficult, but also even more important for us to start doing under this coming Biden administration, because austerity is coming. There's no doubt about it that they're going to come and they're going to put the hammer down, despite the real understanding in this country of all these people who understand that we need things like $2,000 checks. We need those monthly. We need a much more robust like COVID system. And obviously we need, you know, Medicare for all. How are we going to be able to start to push back against this kind of national narrative that we're going to get, which is like the adults are back in the room? And everything's sort of set and settled, and really get people who like want these things, but also know that they need, but might not have like the confidence or the belief that anything really good can come out of politics.
Yeah, I think you raise an excellent point in that. I think with the way that our propaganda is set up, it is intended to make us think that none of these things are possible, and we hear it at every juncture, whether it's elected officials or whether it's on cable news channels. And so we are told that none of these things are common or normal. Mm-hmm. We don't hear news about what's happening overseas and internationally where, you know, universal health care is accepted by centrists. And you just don't know these things unless and conservatives even. And you don't mm-hmm. know these things unless you go abroad. And so I think you touched on it within your own question is, there has to be some wins. People have to be able to organize around things that they can win. And I think trying to fight Congress, you can have your AOCs and your Cori Bushes, but I think that's relatively far and few in between. I don't think you're going to have a Bernie Sanders as president for quite a while. But things start on the local level and then often mm-hmm. trickle up to national politics, at least when you think about even some of like the conservative policies that we have. So the three strikes law was started in California. Like that was in the California state legislature. And that mm-hmm. ended up being something that became a national narrative. Defunding the police is something that was started amongst like abolitionists in Chicago and Minneapolis, who often get marginalized in the media. But at the same time, their cities are defunding the police. Mm-hmm. Like you had over a dozen cities that were cutting back some police funding, and now it's a national conversation and people on a national level are talking about abolition, and you're getting local wins. But if we're constantly being defeated because, you know, we see a Barack Obama, but he's not actually progressive. We see a Bernie Sanders, but he like is completely like overthrown by, mm-hmm. you know, establishment interests. That's going to make people disillusioned. And that's why we have so many people who are becoming independents now and not associating with either party. You have more independents than you know, as a bloc than you have Republicans and Democrats, like percentage wise. You have so many Black people, even in the Midwest, where, you know, we're heralding them coming out to vote, where the voter turnout actually declined in many of these like voting wards when you look at like compared to even Hillary Clinton. So if people just keep seeing themselves losing on a national level, you're not going to be able to organize to think more broadly about huge systemic change like socialism and Medicare for all and you know, defunding nationally.
It's really depressing to think about, you know, what's happening to local media in the context of the need to do all of this, right? Like, I mean, what do we do apart from, I mean, like we're trying to do with this show to cover more of those issues that aren't covered in other areas. But I mean, I'm just curious, like, it's a media question, really. Like, is that a huge problem? Or do you think, like, I mean, we either have examples of the Casey Tenets we can get to later of organizations just doing work instead of talking about it. I'm curious what you think about that.
In terms of local media, you mean just in terms of them?
They're horrible anyway, but, you know, there's not really, like, now we have politicians with massive platforms like AOC that, like, I think that's maybe why people get fixated on them, is because they see, like, can see their message sent. But like, I think local politicians, like local issues fall through the cracks in ways that, because, you know, they don't have a superstar congressperson.
Yeah. I think media is like a whole conversation right there, because you know, you do have local media outlets, but they're not necessarily going to, they still have to rely on advertising dollars. You have a democratization of media, which I think has actually been helpful. So I'd rather hear from an AOC than like my local paper in Georgia, who's mm-hmm. going to be, you know, they might be funded by some Koch brothers, you know, miles away. So, you know, that's what's happening to a lot of media mm-hmm. organizations too. So I think it is important, but obviously, like, we can't rely on it. And so we're having to figure out alternatives. I don't really know if that's answering your question, but it's valuable, but I just don't see kind of a clear route for it.
Well, yeah, like I have this quick example of like the KC tenants have been doing these clips of shutting down courthouses to stop evictions going on. And like, that seems amazing. It's just like, how many of these things are happening and we just can't get enough? I mean, it may not be about attention. I mean, stopping evictions probably gets enough attention in those communities itself, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And also, like, a difficult thing too with media is that if it's not like one event, but rather something that's very slowly ongoing, like, you know, the community's basically losing, you know, ongoing economic crisis, or like what's been going on in Indian country for decades, right? You're not always going to have a lead, right? A story that's just going to pop out of that when it's something that's just going on for a really long time, and then you don't get the attention. And I don't want to pivot too much, but like, I think that the answer to that has to be like, we have to build our own kind of organizations, not just media, but, you know, institutions that people can be a part of. Because I think one of the most dangerous things, and I'd be curious what y'all think too, is like going into this next year is going to be the most difficult stuff. But one of the most dangerous things that I've been seeing, especially over this past year, has been like the co-option of a lot of like progressive slogans or ideas and how cynically that's been used by our opponents. For example, like the Trump administration's Department of Labor just put in this really nasty rule to basically allow restaurant owners to take tips from, you know, servers in front of the house staff to pay the back of the house staff, which basically means for the restaurant owner, they're paying everybody less money, and for all the workers, they're all making less money, right? It's a really nasty restaurant lobby bill. But when you read the text of the rule, it's like, oh, we're actually trying to push back against like historical inequities in the way that people are paid in the restaurant industry, which traditionally is like front of the house staff makes a little bit more than back of the house staff, and front of the house staff tends to be, you know, white or more well off or from certain communities, right? So like they're trying to say like, oh, we're trying to fix this, when in fact they're just lining the pockets of restaurant owners. And we also saw that when we were talking with Marshall Steinbaum too on the Michael Brooks show, where there's this big push now to reform labor law, right? Like labor law was written in the time of like systematic like racial like segregation. It's like, absolutely, that's true. And then, but what you end up getting from these kind of pushes to reform labor law is like, oh, we should actually eradicate like the labor union as like a category in 2020, like bring in the 21st century. And they coach it in this kind of progressive language, but underneath it are these really horrible right-wing policies. I don't know. I feel like that's going to be a real big fight that we're going to have over these next few months, is to try to own our like the demands that we're making for social justice and economic justice and racial justice in this country, because the Democrats, and particularly Biden, they're getting really skilled at using that kind of language, but then to, you know, bake in a really nasty right wing neoliberal policy.
Yeah, totally. I think all of this is just historically, it's a battle of propaganda. And whether you use kind of traditional media outlets or some other way to just change people's consciousness, it has to happen where you're giving them information through some medium. But I don't think we can necessarily, like I said before, I don't think we can rely on any of our media outlets that we have right now that are mainstream to really deliver that message. Like, that does not support, you know, their bottom line, their companies after all. So yeah, I think mass line communications, and when that's a thing again, where people can go door to door, I'm big on organizing.
Yeah.
You know, it's what I do. Not on like a mass scale, but I've been a part of like grassroots organizations all of my life. And like the way that we talk to people, you know, you can find avenues through electoral organizing, through like petition gathering. And you talk to people about why certain candidates might be important or certain issues might be important, but you have to find a way to get information to people in person.
Yeah, I mean, one of the problems with that is, like, for instance, when Mitch McConnell can say we don't need an extra $2,000 because the liberals at the Washington Post said so too. And I went on the editorial board, their site, and like literally like 15 out of 19 of the people on the editorial board went to Harvard or a Yale or some other Ivy League. So, I mean, yeah, I guess maybe it's just helping. I mean, people should understand already that these are alien institutions. Like the New York Times and Washington Post aren't really your friend, democracies. Yeah.
I think that's definitely it. And like, yeah. So in the last couple of minutes, there are just two things I'd like to ask you, especially like one with the fact that like you have this really great experience as one being both in the media and like knowing what it's like to make an argument, on podcasts or in writing, but also somebody who really is involved in grassroots organizing. I hope I'm not loading the question too much, but I think that one thing that people really need to understand is that we can have all of these great plans and great policies, but until we start doing that actual kind of organizing work, it doesn't matter how right we are in our like private media spaces either, until we start bringing that to the people. And, you know, this most recent example of, you know, the fight over, you know, force the vote, which again, like, I think they should be getting way more for working with Pelosi. And I also think that a vote on Medicare for all is an absolute priority. But you did see that there was a breakdown between people on Twitter and who are consuming media constantly and actual being able to get people on the streets and, you know, make the kind of the grass. Like, we could talk about a general strike, but how could we make something like that happen? Right. Like, we could talk rhetorically about all these things that we can do. But I think that we need to really start building that kind of bridge between our ideas and, you know, our actions.
Yeah, I think another way to look at that, too, though, is that you have a lot more people who are thinking about these issues that didn't necessarily get in the fold of these traditional organizing apparatuses, groups or whatever. And so a lot of folks, I think, have been radicalized in the past year. I think the pandemic has radicalized a lot of people and we've been stuck inside. So Who are they going to join? So, you know, I think being able to make some noise on Twitter, I think, can be valuable. You also should have like a next step. So what does the phase two look like? Who are you organizing to call whatever legislators that it is that you're trying to, you know, have you hear them? How are you getting people into their ears? What, you know, do you have is there a Google Docs? Is there a sign up sheet? Like, we got all this force the vote stuff. Can we get like a spreadsheet going and just like kind of, I think, some basic things to actually get this from tweets into some sort of a power, some sort of electoral power and political power, really. So, you know, I think it was necessary. I think it was necessary for people to be able to express their frustrations and be able to brainstorm around this. And because it brought in so many new people, you didn't have people who are necessarily experts at organizing. So it's up to people to kind of bridge that gap. The people who are organizers, not to automatically dismiss it. And the people who are, you know, creating these hashtags to find ways to make it into some real political capital.
Yeah.
No, I think that's on. Well, I mean, I really appreciate you, Malaika, joining us tonight on our first episode. It's always a really good time, and happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I'm still enjoying it, though. You know, No matter what this country does, I'm gonna find people. Thanks, y'all.
Sorry if we pestered you too much on your birthday, but we're excited on having you tonight.
Appreciate it. Good luck with the rest of the. Are you doing like seasons or something?
You know what? That's a thought. We had just been doing like every single week, but seasons, You see, every once in a while you see why people go to a seasons model. So
it's nice to take a break.
Yeah. Right. All right. Well, no, but good luck with everything, guys.
All right. Thank you so much. Take care. All
right.
No, that was fun. Honestly, just on that, I think that we'll talk about this later. This was going to be the conversation that we had to open up today. But we really need to start getting very serious about our politics, because we are out of time right now where we don't have, you know, this Bernie Sanders moment that really brought in so many different people into left-wing politics. And if we don't have tangible goals that are able to, you know, be wanting to give people that kind of optimism that is needed, we're going to fall not just into like a depression, but into fanciful thinking. Like when people talk about, for example, a general strike, we 100% need to be utilizing labor power in this country. There's no doubt about it. But there is a big step between saying we need a general strike and utilizing that. Like, you know, I'm a socialist. Like, we need a revolution. Right. But there's a big difference between me saying, like, sitting here today and that kind of political moment. Right. And I think it's really important that we, one, don't get depressed and fall into pessimism. But two, we need to be a little bit more sober-eyed, not saying don't do anything or don't be active. I'm saying the opposite, be incredibly active and be doing a lot. But starting to have that kind of more structural political vision as, okay, here are the players, here's what's available right now, here's what we can do to build power, here's how we can build the organizations that are necessary to achieve these goals, rather than just saying things like, okay, we need a general strike, because we have what, 7%, 7% private unionization is like, we don't have that kind of access even to the labor unions that exist in this country. And we also don't have the unionization rights in this country to be able to organize that without a kind of, you know, heroic scale of quick organizing to get a bunch of non-unionized workers to join in a kind of general strike, right? We just have to start thinking very practically about those questions.
Right. I mean, the problem I supported tentatively, although I thought, like, narrowing it down solely to the vote and then Nancy Pelosi gets your support, I'm like, first of all, is that even a big enough ask for continuing to support her? But regardless, like, sorry, I just lost my train of thought looking at
this. No, I mean, like, the doubt is this, is that, like, they 100% needed to, I think, get something. I was disappointed yes. to see everybody vote for Nancy Pelosi at the end, right? I think that was, you know.
And the PAYGO stuff I mentioned earlier, but the PAYGO stuff, like, it's horrendous that Nancy Pelosi was talking about that stuff. That's a Koch brothers wish list item.
Yeah. So we're in agreement about all of that. My biggest point is that there is just a large jump between saying we're going to put a mount of pressure campaign to get a one particular tactic, right? And, like, let's just focus on that for a second. One particular tactic, and we're going to do a pressure campaign. Okay, that's an idea. And then say, okay, how are we going to do it? We're going to call for a general strike. It's like, we don't have that kind of groundwork right now to do that. And I think I just think it's really important. People weren't, you know, typing, it's like, have a backbone, have a spine. Do you understand that people don't have health? I haven't had health insurance in 4 years. This is incredibly serious to me. And it's so serious that I'm not going to sit here and give people false promises or false hope. I'm not trying to be pessimistic. I'm just trying to be honest, right? And I don't think that it is incredibly noble to pull people, especially if you're doing what we're doing, especially if you're doing media, right? And you have a lot of people who are listening to you and trust your judgment and analysis of what's going on. I don't think that it is actually very noble or brave to sit there and to bring people into a tactic if you don't think that it actually has the potential of bringing in the goods. Because I'm sorry, this got developed a couple weeks before the vote. And I think what Malaika said was good. People do need an outlet for their anger. I 100% agree with that. And I also think that it probably is true that it did get some people to start thinking a little bit more tactically about politics, which I also think was good. But we all know what the kind of meltdown that came out of that too. And that's what happens when you have certain people, in my opinion, who aren't taking it seriously enough to say, you know what, I'm not going to confuse people, or I'm not going to promise something that we're not able to achieve right now.
I mean, Jimmy Dore's brand, just to name him specifically, is about, like, it wanted a referendum on calling whoever, whether it's us media figures or the labor movement or AOC or whoever, just a referendum to call them sellouts so he can move on. Like, that's all it was cared about. I'm not saying that's what everyone was, because, like I said, like, the vote, yes, I think you should demand that and more besides for the vote. Mm-hmm. But I think when it got narrowed down to it's that or you're selling us out, that's exactly what we can't have. We can't have somebody bashing DSA members as on the take. And I saw a lot of that too, that everybody who is arguing against force the vote has healthcare. It's like, you don't know people's lives.
You really don't. I think that's incredibly, it's just wrongheaded to do. And it's also, I think that we really need to be building these kind of political organizations, because it's just like so many people right now are realizing that we are in a dire situation, not just for, you know, people's personal health and the, you know, the economy and just the fallout that's coming. So I'm telling y'all, it's coming. We reopen. We're going to be entering into a very new world, a much more polarized world, a world where if you thought this country was unequal before the COVID pandemic, you're going to be entering into a country that's 10 times more unequal, right? We have a lot ahead of us. And I think a lot of people are realizing that that you know, that moment. And what they want is they want like a moral judgment. I'm just telling you right now, like, moralism is incredibly important and being angry is incredibly important. But the reason that we don't have good things in this country, the reason that the working class in this country is so weak and we are so decimated right now, it's not a question of will. It's not a question of attitude. It's a question of material power and organizing and realizing that in this country in particular, the labor movement and the socialist movement have been decimated for decades and decades by extremely powerful forces. And to fight those forces, we're going to need anger. We're going to need moralism. We're going to need all of those things, right, that get people inspired and ready to fight. But we also need those organizations and we need those vehicles that are going to be able to drive us into power and make our demands not only heard, but, you know, listened to. And that's the kind of cutoff that we're at right now. I understand completely why people want to see, actions from, you know, the squad. And Matt and I are in agreement. We both just said that we think that them all voting for Pelosi was a joke, especially to not really get anything for.
I've been saying for a while, like, look, I could be persuaded that maybe you don't want Akeem Jeffries in there just so he can, like, get ensconced and maybe he's more, but I'm not super convinced by those arguments at all, really. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, when people make them to me, it's like, well, people are going to get confused because he's a black guy that he's progressive. Well, not if the entire squad votes against him, which they should do if in that contingency, right? If you're not going to vote for Pelosi over anything, you're presumably also not going to vote for Akeem Jeffries. So, like, I think there is too much. I understand why people got frustrated that was like, oh, no, it's Pelosi or something worse, right? Like, yeah, that is bullshit. Mm-hmm. But when it becomes a specific thing that, like, frankly, might not be enough to continue supporting Pelosi because of how much it moves the ball forward on Medicare for All. Like, Dave Weigel made this point. Republicans supported Mitch McConnell throughout the last, like, decade, saying, like, hey, let us bring get rid of Obamacare vote to the floor. Mm-hmm. And he let him bring up all sorts of them, and like, it didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. Because, and like, it wouldn't have really clarified, I'm not convinced, the 2022, which talk about urgency, right? If we're talking about the 2022 primary, I don't think it would have clarified even the squishes that much. I mean, maybe it would have a little bit, but like, McConnell still controlled the Senate, so it's not like it was a real vote anyway. So a lot of that, I guess, we're trying to avoid the sweet debate, but it comes up.
But there's a debate, but then there's the actual question. That's what I'm fixated on. Like,
right.
Look, you know, like, you know, personal beliefs. Like, and one thing I just want to make really clear to folks, I love everyone at Majority Report, but I don't work on that show at all, right? So sometimes when I, like, I'm not getting pulled into whatever's going on that channel, even though, you know, Matt is my good friend and colleague here, and I love Sam and Emma and all the folks over there. I'm not involved in those kind of fights. And there's been a long fight because Jimmy Dore made it a personal fight, I will, you know, say. But like, I'm not, and I think with this show in particular, we're trying to not do like personal beefs with anybody, right? We're trying to really just make sure that we get focused on the real deal issues, because that debate was really depressing for me, because there actually was an interesting debate to be had. There was an important debate to be had. There was an important idea and an interesting tactic, and it immediately just turned into toxicity. And you know, and I think again that yes, you can blame it on one person. Maybe I don't think that would be correct though, because I really saw that as a kind of function of people realizing the kind of dire situation that we are in, mixed with the kind of powerless situation that we are in. And I think that that's an important realization to make, and we need to basically take that realization and use that into, you know, and to direct that into organizing.
I agree, which is why all my, and I didn't, I guess I wasn't prom enough to be featured on the spreadsheet that had everyone's positions on it. I was like tentatively in support of it. But the only time I ever really got involved on Twitter is when it's like, okay, now David Sirota is a massive sellout. Now DSA is on the take. Like, I think that stuff is massively harmful, and I don't think it should be made a policy.
Or the National Nurses Union is I mean, come on, y'all.
Like that talk about alienating the left from like organized labor, right? Like, like, take out AOC from it, whatever. People want to call AOC a narcissist, whatever. When it's like set up to say, you know, like, this union person or this activist is on the take and not really for Medicare for All, when that's what they do, it's really disgusting.
I think that's exactly it. And I think, you know, we'll probably get back and have something more in depth on this conversation too. And particularly, you know, the question of building this kind of power. And I'll just say my, you know, one little tagline on this is like, we won't get the party until we have the people. And like, that's the number one fight right now, is to get the people. As we were talking about with Malaika just a second ago, a lot of voters in this country believe in things like Medicare for All, but they're incredibly depressed. And honestly, rightfully so, because their entire lives, politics is only something that gets worse, right? And you have to vote defensively. And we need to start showing people that they can vote, and not just vote, but also participate in politics, participate in unions, participate in political organizations, that will actually achieve improvements in their lives instead of just defending against attacks from the political establishment. But before we go on too much there, we have a couple more things before we get to the post game. But I also just want to do a quick pitch, everybody. Thanks so much to all of our patrons. We've been really, you know, growing this past month, and it's meant a lot to us. But if you aren't a patron already, you know, please consider subscribing at patreon.com/leftreckoning. You get all of the bonus content, including the post games, which are coming on, which we'll be doing one tonight, where we take Discord questions. The Discord is humming. You know, I like to pop in there. I've been talking a little bit of college football, things like that. Matt and I are working on some really exciting patron only interviews. There's definitely a lot that you're getting for your money. And also, you know, you're helping support us and doing the show and trying to bring attention to all of these real organizing fights that are coming in this next year. It's going to be a really dark time with Joe Biden and all of these ghouls coming back into power. You know, Janet Yellen with her $7 million in speaking fees.
Wow. Okay, Bernie, bro. Let's be a little bit easy on the misogyny. Okay.
BlackRock entering into the cabinet, essentially. Blinken getting paid by Palantir. I mean, these people are coming, and it's going to get really dark. And again, too, all of these other kind of more subtle fights, like what we were talking about earlier with these Department of Labor changes to tipping rules, right? These are things that just aren't going to be covered on CNN, because CNN is all going to be the circus. It's going to continue to be the circus for a very long time on those networks. And, you know, this fight is really important to Matt and I, and being able to do this really means a lot to us, but we also find it to be really important. So if you're able to contribute, we really appreciate that at patreon.com/leftreckoning.
Absolutely. Should we play a quick little comedy thing before?
Yeah, I think we should have some fun.
Okay, so this is Nick Lutzko. I started teasing this, but he does stuff with Tim and Eric, and also Vic Berger and Super Deluxe. But this is his little video. It's called Fun. It's just 6 seconds long, but I like it here.
We're getting Biden in the White House, Corona's on the run. 2021 is gonna be so fun. We're getting Biden in the White House, Corona's on the run. 2021 is gonna be so fun.
Okay,
Jesus Christ, that's what's coming, man.
I think you know, also, I should say, you know, for audio listeners, which we are going to set up a podcast feed, we heard you. We'll set up an audio feed for everybody. That was the background there were people breaking into Congress.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be apparent. But I think that pretty much says everything we want to say about 2021. It's there's going to be some optimism and
Oh, you muted yourself, Matt.
Especially elaborated, but the actual, what if you look behind it just a little bit, it's going to be probably horrific.
It's going to be
even if we get coronavirus under control.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a big if at this point. Yeah, I think for this first episode, that sort of wraps it up. We got a lot coming in the post game, though. We got this incredible accusation that all of these people with like white nationalist tattoos, very clear Trump supporters, are actually Antifa, and the moron of the week. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is a big booster of that strategy. We're going to talk about that for a little bit. We're going to talk about the poor souls, the next generation of oil executives who feel like their future has been dashed by the state of the oil industry. Who will think of the oil executives?
Yeah, join the club as far as futures dashed department, guys. Welcome.
We're going to talk about, I think we'll talk a little bit about Assange, all solidarity with him and his fight for freedom.
And good up on AMLO.
Oh, yeah. And good on AMLO, too, for yeah. Sure. And, we'll also be taking Discord questions. So definitely try to join us in the post game, patreon.com/leftreckoning. Anything else you got, Matt?
No, I think that should do it. Yeah, look for us. I don't know if we'll do the venture capitalist takedown today, but we got a lot of stuff on this Antifa.
I'm excited for that.
Antifa sheepdogging patriots into Congress.
No, that's perfect.
What are you gonna say? Yeah.
No, I think that's it. I was just thinking about Trump when in the phone call. When he was saying, he's like, where are you getting this information about all these folks? He's like, social media. He's like, no, not social media. Trump media.
Yeah. I don't know if people might have seen on the Twitch, on the Left Reckoning Twitch feed, I listened to the full Trump call with Raffensperger at 0.9 speed. And it was very, very fun. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we'll get off a second, but how cucked is every Republican? Like, you guys went to law school, and Donald Trump is sitting here like, you'd have to be a child to think I didn't win in a landslide, Brad.
The whole country is laughing. Yeah, the whole country is laughing at you.
Everybody knows it. I think you especially know it, and that's criminal. Like, are you fucking serious? This guy lost Georgia, but the Senate seats and the presidency in Georgia. I mean, it's pretty amazing that. I don't know. There's the this is what Republicans are trained to do as the sort of nakedly authoritarian party, but like you got to have a sense of self-preservation at a certain point. Like it's like you're watching a boat on fire and you're like, there's a lot of rats on that boat. Any moment those rats are going to start, fleeing the ship. And, we mentioned some are, but it's actually just like, then you start smelling like barbecued rat. And like none of the rats are smart enough to be like, I can swim for this. But anyway.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Well, on that note, we'll see you patrons in the post game. And for everyone else, see you next week. Thursdays at 7 Eastern.
Peace out, everybody.